casquer. Tout le monde est gang, gang, gang derrière leur clavier. Nous le guichet on fait voyer, devant l'écran on écrase.
CKUT 90.3 FM.
Hello and welcome to a new year, a new season, and a new episode of Pirate Block Radio here at CKUT 90.3 FM. If you have been listening for a while, then you're probably familiar with me by now, but for those who tune in for the very first time, my name is Malte Leander, and I'm your host, guiding you through these episodes that usually revolve around topics such as digital new media art in a variety of mediums, often focused on local artists and creators that share some more in-depth reflections upon their artworks or approaches to their creations. Pirate Block Radio is part of the Arts Center Eastern Block here in Jejage, also known as Montreal, located on unceded Indigenous lands. This month, we get a mishmash of previous episodes from the archives throughout the years. We get to hear Roby Provost talk about work featured in a previous data salon that focused on work in progress from video game artists. We also get a deep dive into the composer Gol Pesar's work and a discussion together with a past resident artist, Peter Fleming, around his work in the lab at Eastern Bloc. So let's kick it off today with this talk with Roby Provost as part of Data Salon 30 back in 2017.
Welcome back to CKUT 90.3 FM. You're listening to Pirate Block Radio. You will now hear an interview with Roby Provost talking about his work at Eastern Bloc for the Data Salon series. Bon, Roby, bienvenue à Eastern Bloc et à Pirate Block Radio. Merci que vous êtes venu ce soir pour nous en parler de les arcades.
Oui.
So, Roby, maybe you can tell us a little bit about because you're the commissaire dans cette projet là. Donc, maybe you can tell us a little bit about your project and the other projects that you picked.
Yeah. Well, my project is actually a collaboration with Jules Delon. Mm-hmm. And it's actually the first time that we've been collaborating together.
Okay.
I usually do more narrative type game, and Jules is usually more doing exploration base. And since he has a practice more in visual art, he likes to play mostly with the visual aspect, what the games look like. Mm-hmm. He likes to call his game more like how does he actually call it? Like interactive tableau or something like that.
C'est quoi en français?
The genre peinture digitale or something like that. Not interactive. I think he says peinture digitale.
Oui, parce que lui était le haut commissaire, co-commissaire.
Oui, exactement.
Mais malheureusement, il n'est pas ici ce soir.
Non. Donc pour notre for collaboration, actually, we're gonna try to do more of a arcade style, arcade style game, where. You know, times matter, it's like short games. Mm-hmm. It's actually a co-op fishing game where one of the players actually controlling the boat as a big bear and the other one is the fisherman. Mm-hmm. And really the idea is to try to have this sort of weird competition of, you know, like when you go fishing, usually it's who has the biggest fish or who did the biggest or most crazy catch. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of the feeling that we're trying to recreate in the gallery of, like, let's say we play together and we end up picking, you know, big crapé soleil or something like that.
No,
then we might brag about it. Mm-hmm. And then some people might try to, you know, get a bigger fish or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it's more of a light arcade game. Mm-hmm. Hopefully people are gonna dig it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise we picked a bunch of other games ranging from some more old school low graphic visual games to some VR projects as well. You have more of an installation piece too that's more of a physical thing. So I don't know.
So qui les artistes qui présentent ça?
Les artistes, the list is pretty long. I'll try to not
mais
forget. We have Alvaro Salvagno, who's presenting more of a old school sort of, let's say even Commodore 64 type game. We have Penelope et Chloé, that is usually a duo, working with Geneviève Lebleur on more of the physical installation. I think Geneviève is going to be doing projection on top of that. We're going to have Myriam Boucher and her collective called Fantasem, who are going to work on a VR piece that I saw a previous version of. I don't know if they're going to change it. Very beautiful piece. We're going to see Grand Bruit. Grand Bruit, which I think you're part of.
Yes.
Maybe you want to talk about that one?
No? Okay. Okay, well, yeah, I can talk a little bit about it. So, let's talk about everybody else's pieces first.
Okay. We have Hope Aaron, who's working on Hot Dog Bijou, who's a dog.
My favorite title for all the games.
It's a pretty good title, I must say. So, yeah, she's working on that, like, cute dog exploration game.
Okay.
That's as much as I know about it. We have Alex, who's working on, I don't even know how to pronounce that one. Trapezier, which is more of a narrative slash text game.
Okay.
Thank you.
Nice.
What else do we have? Ganesh,
Baron
Alois, who's working on the Deadline Demain Matin, which is a Kinect slash installation game. And then Megan Baguette is working on Adotech, which is, I'd say, half a... It's actually a web piece, a web game usually, but she's going to try to turn this into a more of an installation piece with multiple screen... kind of a board game. It's actually a modified board game.
Okay.
And I think that's it. Alexandre Lemire's game, actually I'm just gonna reset it, say just so I have his last name. So Alexandre Lemire's game is Trapes. I don't even know how you pronounce that one actually. And yeah, it's more of a narrative web game as well. It's usually a web game. Yep.
Cool, nice, yeah. Apollo Owns, we have this project that I'm part of a collective, and we're presenting a game called Apollo Owns. The collective is called Grand Prix, and it's one of the members in the collective found the text that Nixon's speechwriter had written in case the Apollo Owns mission was unsuccessful, and it's like this big text about like we're devastated and we tried making it but we didn't and that sort of thing. And so we got really inspired from this text about making a game, and originally the idea was the game you already lost, or like the game you can't win, or something like that. And so we kind of played with that idea at first, but now it's evolved much farther than that. And yeah, so it's kind of just like you're trying to land on the moon, but you're kind of going through the narrative of this spaceman that is inspired by Michael Collins, who was one of the astronauts who was on the Apollo 1's mission, but actually didn't land on the moon. He's like the only of the three, the only guy who went who didn't land on the moon. So it's like this idea of him watching... people falling and dying and kind of reflecting on that.
Very funny, very light theme.
Yeah, it's like, you know how I do. I do light themes.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's that project. But Eastern Bloc had this idea for doing an arcade and kind of presenting video games that were atypical and also more of a perspective of maybe a critical approach to what a video game can be. And so that's when we reached out to you, because we know you as our video game go-to guy, and because we like the work that you've done on video games before. And so this is kind of how this project came to be. So we actually just finished a meeting talking about where everything's going to sit in the space.
Yeah.
What do you think? Is it going to be good?
I think so. Well, we'll see, obviously. I think it's... you just said like how things are going to look in this space, and I think that's where it would be easy, let's say, to just, you know, put video game in the space. But I think for it to really come together, you really need to think about, you know, like as you would do on a regular art show, like how do you want stuff to come together, whether stuff needs to be more installation based or whether you need, like, we were asking artists very basic questions such as, do you want your game to be played while sitting or standing, which makes a difference. If you're going to play like a narrative or like more slow paced game, you obviously don't want to be like standing in the uncomfortable position for like 7 minutes trying to, you know, complete the game. So there's a lot of mood slash physical aspect to game that we could quickly, you know, just forget about. Yeah. And it definitely changed the way that you approach the games in general. Mm-hmm. Yeah, some games benefit from having more of a physical installation. That's actually something that you can do once you decide to exhibit them. If they're just, you know, straight up on the internet, even the web games that we have right now, we could transfer them directly, just projecting them on the screen, but does that do them justice? Should we try to go to different directions? So I think there's a lot of interesting things that we can do with game as a medium. But yeah, we need to think about how we're going to present them.
What inspires you about video games?
Obviously, coming up as a teen in the early 2000s, playing Sonic while growing up, and then getting the Sega Dreamcast, which I like to focus on right now. It was, I guess, how I spent my time when I was a young kid, you know, whether playing, I was playing Warcraft 2 online, like so many matches back to back. I didn't know at first I would get more as in art practice, but it was just something that was so everywhere when I was a kid, that it definitely made its way through my practice. I think as well that the two medium that was like the closest to was cinema, which like offers a very linear experience, and like it's a time-based experience, but it's like set from A to Z, and you watch it, and I kind of like the freedom of, especially when like adventure games sort of got more popular on 3D console, where like you have huge world, you're not stuck to like level based like Mario or Sonic, where it's like it's still linear in that sort of sense.
Yeah, totally.
So I guess I like the freedom of how you speak your narrative, what the player can do, that kind of interaction. So I don't know, I guess, why is it there? Just because it's always been around when I was a teenager, and it just gave me so many ideas of like what could be possible in a video game. Yeah.
No, that's great. I think that's a good reflection. I mean, especially when, like, I don't know, with I don't know, you know, we're talking about technology a little bit, always on the show, but just how technology is evolving and how games help us question things. I don't know. That's my interest with games is something that's been in society since like the beginning.
Yeah.
And now it's something that's being exploited into these mediums where we can live fantastically through them. And it's the same, I kind of draw the same correlation with what I enjoy about science fiction, is that it allows us to live like in our current reality, but in a different, from a different lens.
Yep.
And so it's like a voyeurism that gets to happen there, and that's what I find interesting about video games personally.
There's a bunch of things, I guess, to find interesting. That's one for sure. And you mentioned that it was there since the beginning of time. Obviously, like, game is just, I think, another way to interact with other human being through a different set of rules. You know, if we're going to play chess, there's objective and there's stuff that we can do. Obviously, there's kind of a, not the domination sort of effect, but like there's going to be a winner, a loser, and we're sort of opposing each other with like basically strategy. How can I predict what you're going to do? How do you move on a board? You know, is it like kind of a war simulation up to a point? So,
and it's, I think it's interesting that a lot of games now, you see, especially Indian games, are questioning that, whether it's whether winning and losing is a purpose. You know, it's
for sure.
It's a good reflection to have. And
definitely, I feel like maybe at some point in time, this was sort of a go-to thing. You know, why do you play game? I need to win, or I need to be the best one, or whatever. And yeah, definitely, I like. all that to say, like, even Jules Delon, who's my partner on this game, most of his game usually are very open-ending on, like, what you should be doing. And even his previous game called La Guilde de Damoclès is a game where you're collecting swords. You don't know exactly why you're collecting swords. You don't know how many swords you need to collect. The swords actually just respawn almost forever. You have no clue how many swords you need to collect.
Well, when you start collecting swords, you don't ask yourself that question.
No, right? Good one. So yeah, you're actually collecting sword, and I guess in order to make it sort of feel like a real first-person shooter game, he added a shotgun that actually shoots shotguns. And even though you shoot shotguns on whatever creature being that are around, you cannot actually harm them. You don't necessarily get anything from shooting them, so why would you shoot them in the first place? So definitely I think the idea of like violence that we mostly see in video games, sort of winning points, it is a topic that I feel like a bunch of people are actually questioning or using as a research point when doing video games. Yeah, I mean, do we always need to win in the end? Are we winning? Are we losing? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, Robbie, thanks very much for coming to Eastern Bloc and having a few beers with us and talking about the Data Salon Arcade that's happening on April 13th at Eastern Bloc. Yeah. All right.
Cool. Talk soon. Thanks to you. All right.
Let's move on over to an in-depth discussion with Gold Pessard in 2019. This episode contained a longer stretch of an improvised performance that I won't be playing today, but that you can listen to in its entirety on Mixcloud if you look up episode 33 of Pirate Rock Radio.
You just heard an experimental and poetically infused sonic landscape by Gold Pessard. Thank you for performing for us, Husbe.
Thank you for having me.
That was wonderful. Sorry, we were not prepared for this. We didn't know you were going to end so quickly. So,
would you like to explain a bit of your creative process for composing what you describe as circular narratives?
Yeah. I mean, I guess for me, circular narratives first came... was actually a quote from an interview with the artist Jenny Vell, who I like a lot, and she was describing her work as a house full of rooms, basically. Her album is a house full of rooms, and how every track was like a kind of appearing into an entire kind of microcosm. And I really like that about her work, and when I make sets or even albums, I like to have that element to it, that idea of like you're kind of peeking at a lot of different things, but without getting the full story on anything.
And you can sense that too. I know when we were listening, well, when I had the headphones in the booth, you took us to a lot of different spaces. Like I almost saw what you wanted me to see, but could you describe a little bit about what you want your audience to see? Like, what are you visualizing when you're playing, when you're making this?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. It's funny that you talk about seeing things, because I feel like it is very visual. At least when I'm making music, I often see colors and shapes more than I perhaps even listen to things. It kind of feels like a collage more than it does a making a track or something. So I'm not too sure what I want the audience to see. It's more of a general kind of feeling of uncanniness,
or yeah,
like just this like a bit of humor, a bit of seriousness, a bit of darkness.
Yeah, but is there a world that you visualize, or like is it like underground in a subway, or like is it in a desert, is it in an apocalyptic dystopian era? What is it that you
honestly I really don't know. That's not something I ever asked myself, but I feel like a lot of people come to me with remarks about about how they feel like it's apocalyptic, or how they feel like it's terrifying, or like, you know, moody or doomy. But I never, it's not really something that crosses my mind personally.
It wasn't intentional. That's not what you didn't set out to have that mood.
Yeah, no, not really. Mm-hmm. Not really. Or maybe I guess, maybe I find it a bit easy to describe something as like dark.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not really saying much about the thing.
Yeah.
So I tend to steer away from those adjectives.
Fair. And actually earlier, just before you did your set, we were talking about describing music. And would you describe what you played as music? And then you said you're starting to call it sound art. And can you talk a little bit about the difference between sound art and music and your relationship to that?
Yeah, I also said how I felt like an asshole describing my music as sound art. I don't really know. I mean, for me, at the end of the day, it doesn't really change what I'm doing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
What I call it, or what I how I describe it to other people. I think the interest of calling it sound art to musicians or sound artists, if you will, is that I feel like the landscape of contemporary music or contemporary electronic music is mm-hmm. changing a lot. It doesn't just exist in underground parties or clubs. It exists in galleries, it exists in venues, it exists in all sorts of places that art exists. And so I think musicians are finding it more accurate to call themselves sound artists, like mm-hmm. when you're making installation or doing performative work or playing just in a gallery, for example. It kind of reflects more what you're doing, the landscape of what you're doing, outside of just a musician, because that comes with a lot of historical baggage, right?
Yeah.
Being a musician.
Yeah, totally. I just had more of a curiosity, a question. I know that, for instance, like on the rare occasion, I make sometimes mixes and I think about how I want or where I want people to listen to them. And sometimes I actually really like when people enjoy listening to music on the metro. So a lot of the mixes I do, it's so that people can listen to it in transit. Is there some place that you... Is there like a preferred setting where you want people to enjoy?
That's interesting. I think that whenever I make sets or mixes, or even albums, they always start out as being live sets, mm-hmm. and then they become albums because I like how they sound. But so it's always more. It's a certain like venue on a given time. I'm thinking more of like people in crowds,
okay.
and like a certain time that I am thinking of like the metro for like transit or stuff like that.
Okay, so your process is more you are put into a space and then you kind of adapt it, within that.
Yeah,
sonically.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah.
Really sweet.
I'm actually interested in your sampling, since you've mentioned, well, you refer in your music a bit of your Iranian heritage. Where do you source your samples from? Like, what do they mean?
So I source my samples from kind of the same place. I source my Iranian samples from kind of the same place I source all my other samples.
Okay.
So it's a mix of online, of mm-hmm. old CDs from my parents mm-hmm. or family friends.
Really? You dig into old CDs? I love that.
Yeah, I commission family friends to give me CDs.
But that's sweet. That does refer to like the memories. Like it's really like real DIY. Like it actually, it's part of people's, like, it's not just like, oh, music. It's really, I don't know. It's more, it has a more,
it's like a collage almost of history. And
yeah. And for me, the process of getting the sounds is also the process of like getting closer to family and friends and unveiling memories, mm-hmm. because I mean, I grew up in a family where we, like a very loving family, but a family that didn't share much.
Okay.
And so it's almost like when I started kind of digging in these Iranian sound, in like these sounds of Iranian music, I also started digging in like the stories of my parents or my mm-hmm. grandparents and my family. And then, you know, and it's almost like I would be the one being like, to like my mom, for example, being like, hey, have you heard this track from like that traditional, or like that Persian pop star from like when she was young? Mm-hmm. And she'd be like, oh, how does it go again? And then like, I'd try to sing it to her. And then she'd be like, oh yeah, that's really good. You know, but it's funny that the process is like, is almost reversed, you know? It's yeah. like, I'm the one going like, hey, have you heard this song, you know? Because they don't really, they're not the type to like, to be like, hey, listen to that, listen to this. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah.
And apart from like music inspiration, do you get inspired by like artifacts, like pictures maybe of like yeah, pictures, writings, videos from maybe family footage or for your pieces? Because I kind of felt like I don't know, it might.
Yeah, I mean it. I mean, and like the album cover, like my album cover, for example, is an old picture of my dad. Yeah, in Tehran, and like he was a baby, and like my grandmother holding him like in their backyard, for example, you know. So there is this footage. I mean, there is this visual kind of story as well, but it definitely is more at the sonic level. But like the sounds can come from Iranian movies or come from poetry, you know, but it's still sound.
And it's a way to, I think, reconnect to your heritage, especially the being in Montreal, and maybe not all of your family is in Montreal, and it's a way to kind of share, just like you said, maybe in a family that doesn't share too much, it's a way to kind of go back in your history of the songs that they used to listen to, now that you listen to, and you're completely repurposing something that was so meaningful to them and now to you. And how do like, do you play this stuff to them? What do they say when they hear like an 80s pop star in?
Yeah, I mean, that's, I do play it, but I, for the longest time, I was terrified of playing it to them, because I was like, what the, you know,
what are they going to say?
are they going to be like, why are you butchering these? Like, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. So I was kind of very afraid, but I've only received really positive reactions. Okay. And that kind of makes me think of the fear too, of like, reconsider that fear of showing this to them, and why I had that fear and where that was coming from, you know, and realizing that fear is not from a place of my peers. It's from a place of outside, you know. It's a fear that's installed, it's very deeply entrenched, but it's not justified at all, because all the Iranian people that hear it really kind of, I mean, it's the most beautiful, it's like the most rewarding thing is to hear mm-hmm. is to hear them be like, wow, that was something, or that brought me this memory or that memory, or that resonated so deeply with me. So I think that for me is the most rewarding thing, yeah.
To have them listen to what you, and have they seen you live? Like, has your family or your mom like gone to a live show?
Yeah, she was at my show last weekend.
I love moms at raves. Terrified. I love that.
Yeah, moms at raves, but she was like, she was afraid. Like, I had to like be like, mom, you couldn't get in the room. Like, she was, because it was dark and loud.
But we.
Yeah.
She survived though, and
she survived. She said she liked it, but you know.
But her fear was what? Her fear that was that to see you live, or it was to be in a completely different, unknown environment to her.
I mean, I think it's just that environment, right? I mean, so many people who aren't 55-year-old Iranian women would not feel comfortable in those settings. So, I mean, you know.
But there's something I think so interesting with the history of how and what brings people to raves, especially when it's like the minority crowd. And there's always a story, like the story in this case, like if a random person maybe asked your mom, why are you here? You know, like it's a beautiful story. And I think that exploring that is super interesting. Like, what brings this niche community into like a 5 a.m. rave on Du Rocher?
Imagine. She hasn't come to a 5 a.m. one yet.
No, okay.
And I haven't played that one yet. So.
Okay. Well, here's to all the promoters.
Exactly.
Get them to play on Du Rocher.
You're right.
Yep. Well, it was really beautiful. I had some other questions and I think I forgot, but I'm going to look at my Google Notes. Mm. Okay. Yeah, actually, I was more just curious. What are the women saying in your samples in Farsi? What are they?
There's a lot of them. I mean, I could start by just naming some of the people, for example. One is Farouk Farouzad, who's one of the most important contemporary poets in Iran, who died a tragic death very young, but she was considered as spearheading Iranian poetry to kind of like the contemporary stage. Like, really, really big person. And also,
in what year?
This was a bit before the revolution.
Okay.
And then a bit during the revolution.
Okay.
But yeah, but and she speaks a lot about love and about lust and all these things that were really taboo for an Iranian woman for any woman at that
mm-hmm.
in those years, actually. and so it's quite beautiful to hear her speak. And she also made a documentary about a colony of lepers outside of Iran called
A Colony of Leopards?
Lepers.
Okay.
Lepreux.
I was like, I did not hear that. Okay.
Perfect. Wild animal. She was on the
more.
Discovery Channel. No. but yeah, a colony of lepers. Like, but all this to show like what a kind of like a fearless spirit she was of,
yeah.
you know. And then...
A true activist.
Oh my God, yes. Really inspiring person. Yeah. And a lot of her poetry is translated to English, so you can
beautiful.
You can read her quite easily.
What was her name again?
Farouk Farouzad.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the rest, I mean, are a lot of Iranian, some of them are Persian pop singers.
Hmm.
So like before the revolution. And some of them are traditional Iranian singers. And yeah, I like to sample Gugush a lot. Gugush is like the Persian Celine Dion.
Well, with a name like that, how can you not
better.
Be?
It's so much better.
Gugush.
Gugush, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that the track that you heard in the set was from her. Yeah.
And is there any, like, have you, how deep have you gone digging into Iranian music? Like, have you discovered the niche, like, genres and where the evolution through time came?
Not that deep, actually. I'm not... Not that I'm not a crate digger or a DJ at heart, but
mm-hmm.
I just, it's hard to balance creating and composing with searching, because when you're making music, you can't listen to music because you're making your own music.
Fair.
Yeah. And it's something that, yeah.
Does that bug you?
It bugs me. Yeah.
Okay.
It bugs me. I'd love to have more time to just listen to music.
Discover
and catalog and stuff, because when I play live, I kind of it ends up kind of feeling like a weird DJ set. It ends up being it feels that way, so I'd like to have a bit more time to develop that sometime.
But have you been to Iran? Have you gone back recently?
Yeah, I mean, recently, no. Last time was 8 years ago. And it's complicated going back there.
Yeah, you were talking about that last time.
Political reasons, yeah.
Yeah. But it would be interesting, like, do they have record stores? Is that something that you would be curious into looking into? And
that's a good question. I don't know if I actually have no idea if, like, the vinyl comeback...
No?
Is a thing there.
Okay.
I don't know. I'd be really curious. I mean, I know there's a great experimental electronic scene there going mm-hmm. on now, spearheaded by this artist called Sote, S-O-T-E, who's an insane electronic artist, who with a few other people started this festival called SET Festival, S-E-T. And
where is that?
It's in Tehran.
Okay.
And this festival collaborates with CTM every year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's completely legal. And these are electronic Iranian artists making really avant-garde electronic music. So it's still a well-kept secret, and yet it's quite amazing what they do. So that I'm very aware of. I don't know what else is.
No, but how does the traditional Iranian community react to this electronic music scene? Are they welcoming of it? Are they understanding, or are they very against?
I don't know.
No.
I'd need to be there, but I think, when I was there, people, it's like, it's the internet. Everyone listens to everything, right?
Yeah.
Electronic music is an interesting one because it's completely legal there because it's not perceived as a potential political threat, I guess.
But does it not attract a crowd that might be, less traditional? Like, it attracts a lot of LGBTQ community that kind
Yeah, for sure. I can only imagine it does, yeah. I can only imagine this, but...
You don't know.
I don't know, yeah.
That'd be very interesting. Yeah.
You actually shared recently a podcast about experimental music in Iran.
Yeah.
I remember listening to it, and it was explaining how at these shows, I think it was illegal to dance.
Yeah.
Then people were just sitting down, and I feel like it's a completely different experience to experimental music, and people are really, it's more like a contemplative experience, and I just felt that was really fascinating. Yeah, the rapport, like, with the... I don't know.
With this, I remember thinking that too. I mean, I've been to a lot of shows where people sit down here.
Yeah.
Also, but it's true that when, some of these artists play like crazy beats, and like I was thinking actually, like, how hard would it be to like be sitting down during like these crazy beats? Like, the only thing you want to do is get up and dance.
But also as the performer, maybe like you perform off of that energy, and like there's just
totally.
People are sitting.
That's a really good point. Actually, it must make it so much more challenging to perform that high energy music without the feedback of like a dance floor going nuts.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
Yeah, but I mean, this is the beauty of sound and electronic music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did Sam is talking to me via code? What?
I guess we can slip into some music soon, and then we could
Sweet.
Go
oh,
back
yeah.
and maybe continue the discussion afterwards if you're interested.
Yeah.
Sam had some music that she actually curated based off of your set today.
I cannot wait to hear this.
I was just inspired by your sounds.
And thank you for coming. This is so sweet. I'm so happy that you came. And he just released an album. Maybe do you want to talk about it?
Yeah, I can plug in. I can advertise a bit. It's called Khane, and it's released under my artist name Golpesar. Khane is spelled K-H-A-N-E-H, and it's on the Montreal label Dream Disc Lab, alongside a lot of other good works in that label. Check it out.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for coming on, and I think we'll talk a little bit later. And,
And Sam is going to mix for us.
Thank you
for having me.
And lastly, for today's archival episode here at CKUT 90.3 FM, we are listening to a discussion with Peter Fleming, who had a residency with Eastern Bloc in 2017.
So welcome to Power Block Radio.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
This is actually, we don't do a lot of these pre-recorded, so we're just gonna fly off the seat of our cuffs here and see how it goes.
Okay.
Usually this is always live, but we're here during Peter's office hours slash his internship at Eastern Black.
Wait,
his residency at Eastern Black. Yeah, we changed it. I forgot to tell you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
So welcome.
Thanks.
I'm going to grade you at the end of this interview.
Okay.
For your internship.
It was good to be here.
So can you tell us a little bit about your practice, actually?
Sure. I've been an artist active for, depends how you count it, but almost 20 years. And I've generally worked with, I'd say I work with systems, and sometimes systems that involve kinetics, like things that move around, almost always electronics, sound, solar power, electromagnetics, kind of a little bit of informal engineering, informal physics, and kind of on the border between art, science stuff. Hmm. Usually manifesting as installations, sometimes as performances, and installations are quite often resolved on site and involve a high degree of improvisation.
What is it about systems that, like, inspires you to create work?
Well, they're kind of open-ended, and they can be constantly added to, constantly edited, constantly be in evolution. And I find with systems, it's possible for me to create these situations where I can take a whole bunch of relatively simple elements, and I can add them all together and put them into a complex system, mm-hmm. and I can create a system that I don't really have the ability to fully understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like that. I like when you can make something that has surprising or emergent behaviors to yourself, even as the creator. And then it's the fun part is, or the interesting part, challenging part, is trying to then understand it and see what's going on. And mm-hmm. it's kind of a tool for contemplation, or a tool for, provoking thought, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think it's interesting because you also mentioned systems and improvisation, like, within the same sentence. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think when we think of systems, we don't necessarily think of improvisation as well. So how do you resolve those two practices together?
There's not really a there's lots of contradictory things, I guess, within my own practice or within anyone's practice. But those two things don't really seem to have they exist alongside each other pretty well. Like, when I say improvisation, I think I mean, like, it's not completely just pulling stuff randomly out of the air. It's more like I arrive in a situation, which is usually a exhibition at a gallery or at some kind of space, and I have a toolkit. So it's more like I have a schematic or a framework with me, and I have a vocabulary of materials, techniques, different approaches that have sort of built up over the years. So it's not like coming at a situation just completely blank or completely empty. Mm-hmm. So the improvisation is more like you get into the situation, you have this toolkit, you have this schematic, you have this framework, and then you kind of work with what's there architecturally, mm-hmm. or spatially, or whatever the constraints are of that mm-hmm. particular environment. Mm-hmm. So it's maybe a little bit like how I've heard certain musicians talk about improvising. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not just... it's not just completely all brand new every single right. time. Like, it comes with it. There's a structure of scales and notation and musical system and kind of stuff to draw on.
Yeah, a language that you've developed for which
exactly. You can yeah, yeah. And then you have your own, you have your favorite sort of little phrases or something that you can come back to repeatedly. So it's like you have a bit of a comfort zone or like something mm-hmm. familiar, mm-hmm. and then the challenge is to. When you step outside of that, and mm-hmm. that's when really interesting new stuff sort of starts to happen.
Yeah, totally.
For me, anyways. Yeah, but yeah.
So, can you talk about the toolkit that you brought with you for the residency here?
Sure. Yeah, it's a open source hardware project, and it's called a NeuroMime, and it's basically an electronic version of an organic neuron, and it's an attempt to implement certain, not all, but certain fundamental properties of organic neurons in an electronic circuit. And it's a design that was, the schematic was invented by Norman White, who was my electronics teacher and is still my mentor. And it's a project that has myself, Norman, Stephen Kelly in Halifax, Mifanwe Ashmore in Toronto just joined us, and we're kind of working collectively on this hardware device. And it's kind of a long-term sporadic research project. So meaning like we all have other stuff that we're also working on, but then every once in a while one of us will concentrate on some development for this project.
And what is their other involvements?
Well, Norman is basically the, he's like the dad.
He yells at all you guys?
Yeah, he's the sort of the, it's his idea. Okay. Like, yeah, and it's his design. And then really what happens is, mostly it's been Stephen and I who've known each other for years, like since I went to graduate school in Halifax, and I go back there. I've been going back in the summer times, and then we work in his studio informally on... he's a computer scientist also now. He's like artist turned computer scientist, so he's really interested in neural networks, neurological computation, so he brings that to it, ideas from that field. And then we just kind of try out different experiments and circuit topologies and stuff in his studio. And then Mifanwe is also someone who I've known for years, and she's kind of a recent she's kind of recently joined the project. It's open to anyone, like really. It's on GitHub, and if you want to fork it or copy it or whatever, it's possible. So our next, after the Eastern Bloc residency, our next thing will probably be in the summertime. We want to continue with this summer thing and make it a little bit more, instead of it just be me and Stephen in his studio in Halifax, we want to do something at Norman's place. He has he lives in an old grain mill on the Saugeen River, and we want to do kind of a NeuroMimes summer school thing. So
with the three of you, or with more students?
With at least the four of us, and then more people, just to kind of get some more momentum for the project. Nice. We haven't really figured it all out yet, but we thought maybe it would start something with the core group and then open it up to workshops. And Norman has a big party every summer too, like, so we kind of like tie it all into to one.
Sounds like a fantastic thing to do for the summer. So we're here during your office hour. And
Open lab.
I keep calling office hour because you told us that you wanted to keep the same hours as your office hours.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Yeah. Well, I wanted to keep the same hours as I teach on Thursdays in the fall semester.
Right.
And then I wanted to keep it. So it's like,
That's why I keep calling
Office hours. I don't mind. Office hours, open lab.
Open office hours?
Open office. Yeah.
Lab?
Yeah.
So, because that was a big part of your application when you applied for the artist residency program at Eastern Bloc, and one of the reasons why we wanted you to do your residency here was because of this involvement. So I'm curious what you were hoping to get out of the open labs.
Really just a way of talking to other people and meeting other people. And I don't know, I really like Eastern Bloc, and it's literally down the street from me, so I can get here quite quickly. And just a way of, I mean, I was a long time ago, I was on the first board of Eastern Bloc, so it's a way of reconnecting and seeing what's going on in the lab. And a lot of the time, as an artist, I'm kind of working in isolation in the studio, which I like. I really enjoy that time. It's like some of my favorite time, but I feel like it's nice to get out And I felt that past projects that I've done where I've kind of opened it up a little bit and gotten some feedback for the work in progress or just some discussion, it's really helps improve the project and you can make better art. Mm-hmm. So mainly social and opening up and just getting into a situation where I could just talk to other people and also see what they're working on too, and then maybe people would be interested in working with like becoming part of the what's it called, like the like a contributor or something like that.
Interesting.
So
this is like your second open lab, and then I think you have two other ones before
one more,
and then your presentation.
Yeah.
What are you going to present? Do you have an idea?
Oh, what am I going to present?
Yeah.
I'm working on a few things. Like I have kind of a fallback idea, which is to present something that Stephen and I came up with in Halifax, which is basically so there's these individual neuromime cells, and then we have about 30 or 40 cells. Soldered together. So the fallback idea is just to have basically a network of cells more or less randomly connected and kind of creating a feedback loop. So there's the cells and then they output an audio signal, and then that audio signal is fed back in like the audio signal would be say with a transducer, like, you know, make the wall vibrate or something like that, and then there'll be some sort of pickup that'll be attached to the wall and like feed that back into the system, so to create some sort of feedback kind of loop. So that's a fallback thing, and that just sort of demonstrates a little bit like a network of neurons that are actually doing something in the in the real world. And then I've been working on a bunch of sort of variations of the circuit and additions and modifications to the circuit, maybe four or five of them. So I was thinking of, this is not quite resolved yet, like, but maybe just a little sort of demo of each one or one of them. It'll have a very science fair like feel, I think. So I'll have like one or two working things of just the work in progress. And then I was thinking maybe of having some kind of didactic material, like not text, but just like drawings and like, you know, blowing up pages from my sketchbook and this sort of stuff like that. So it's there. Cool. And yeah.
Great.
Yeah. And I'm not sure what it'll, I'll try to make it as like a user friendly as possible. But, you know, it's like when you're like really deep into this like specific type of subject, like I'm not sure, there'll be something like lots of flashing lights and like I like to weird
call that,
sounds.
I like to call that candy, the flashing lights.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there'll be something, there'll be some visual and audio kind of hooks there. And then like with some kind of, like I say, like very science fair type of feel, I think. Yeah.
So is there any other, besides this project, or you have any other projects that you're currently working on as well?
I always have a lot of projects that I'm working on.
Is there another other one that's like going to come into focus once the residency is done?
One major project I'm working on simultaneously is at Concordia University, which is this thing called Embedded Faculty Initiative, and that's about taking faculty from the arts, the fine arts, and trying to embed them in research centers and laboratories around the rest of Concordia in engineering and the sciences and this sort of thing. So I've been visiting over the past year all kinds of different research labs and research centers within Concordia University, and just to basically get this art science thing kind of one more, to help provide one more kind of channel for this.
Are you involved with that brain project?
Oh, the convergence project.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe it's convergence.
Yeah, the one that's between McGill and Concordia. Not peripherally.
Okay. I just thought with the, you know, neurons and. brain.
No, I know those people, like, and I was kind of involved at the beginning, and then it was basically I'm not directly involved, but they're friendlies, they're colleagues. Okay. So I keep bugging them about coming here, and hopefully, you know, maybe some of them will show up. Mm-hmm. Like, it'd be really great to talk to real neuroscientists.
And, yeah.
And I think it would be great for them too. Like, that whole Convergence project is really interesting because they, you know, the scientists have their own kind of environment that they're normally working in. The artists have their environment that they're normally working in. And I think it would be really interesting for scientists to come to somewhere like Eastern Bloc and kind of see where. Like an art lab kind of thing, and how like art's being made and researched and that sort of stuff. And I think they have been doing some of that stuff for that project, like been visiting different galleries and whatnot. But I'm not sure if they've actually visited places where the art's actually in the process of being researched or not. So yeah, no, it's a good. That's a good project. Yeah, it's like a they're friendlies. Yeah.
Nice, interesting. Yeah. Well, thanks for taking the time and talking to us about your project.
Hopefully, thanks for having me here. Yeah, hopefully there's some usable material in that.
I think so. Yeah, I think that'd be pretty good. Thank you.
was all from this episode of Pirate Block Radio. A soft start to the new year by looking back onto past episodes from previous years. But believe me when I say that there will be plenty more where that came from. Tune in next month for a kickstart to the new season with new fresh material first Thursday of the month between 8 and 9 p.m. Tune in to follow along, and I will see you there.
...90.3 FM is proud to rebroadcast the following program entirely in the Mohawk language. The Mohawk, or Gagnac Gehaga, are the original people of the unceded traditional territory known as Montreal, or Chojaake. The Gagnac Gehaga, or people of the Flint, have two communities close by, and they are working hard at revitalizing their language. This program is part of those efforts, and it originally aired in Ganasadage on RKR Reviving Ganasadage Radio. And now, listen to Chojaake's indigenous language on CKUT.
Kwe ganasida ke hrono onegene giga ganta zaganas I dana injira zesa nana izeno ni tantsko da nana wahne dio ni hosano da dana da haso tete ni ne giga akwe kuyat kwano harado giga jini jezo da hom sada ayamas giga umak tuzeto do serda da sama giga akwe kwa izo wadara izo wadara sfio hakata no izo wahne izo wahne